So, Chief Constable, if we look at more contemporary issues, things that are kind of happening at the moment, when you were faced with kind of illegal parades and some protests too, you probably would say the police on the ground were the balancing competing rights and so on. But do you agree that it looks to communities that sometimes different communities at different times got very different kind of policing responses?
We have to work really hard at communicating that. But in all honesty, the approach has been the same. Because I come back to that bit, you know, my job as chief is to make sure not only is policing effective, but also it's compliant with human rights. And you can't take that to the heart of an organisation and then discard it if it's inconvenient. And I won't do that. So whether it's the July the 12th or whether it's the unforeseen crisis of the last 2 or 3 months, the primary responsibility has been to protect life and public safety. And they're judgments you make depending on the circumstances you're facing. For example, when you have on one night alone over 7,000 people on the streets in over 80 seats of protest, you cannot commit to dealing with minor matters when you have to keep your resources back to deal with outbreaks of serious disorder. And that can look fairly messy because people for half an hour see a road being blocked and think, why aren't they sweeping it off? But I have to look at the whole province. And from our control room, that's what we did every night at the flag protest. We assessed very carefully what was the challenges coming in terms of protection of life. And sometimes we had to hold our resources back to do that. But all the time, we were very clear, and I was very clear through December. Sometimes it got a little bit ridiculed by people that actually there would be consequences. And we've been clear that we would not ignore law-breaking. When it became clear that, sadly, this was going to go on beyond December, we put in place the investigative resources to carry through that consequence piece, as indeed we did in the Ardoyne, and indeed we did at some of the other disturbances over the last 2 or 3 years. And we've been working through that methodically. There are some difficult issues around the Public Processions Act, which are complex. They don't lend themselves to commentary and sound bites.
But if you don't put in a form, then you're within 28 days before a parade, then it's illegal.
There is a process, but there's also, and it's European law about the right to assembly under Article 11, which basically means you do that. Doesn't mean to say, of course, you don't follow through. But if there's a minor misdemeanor, as we would call it, being committed, there's a right to assemble, which is actually there. So you have to deal with this in a very proportionate and a measured way. But the decision-making model we always follow is public safety and protection of life, Article 2. You look at the offending, you look at the proportionality of your response. And quite frankly, I was concerned, based on a huge amount of advice from people, that if we'd been overzealous, not only might we have been acting beyond the human rights ethos, but actually we could have made it far worse. People forget White Rock in 2005 and Drumcree and the tens of thousands of people that came on the streets. And in January, you only had to look at the Nolan show to see the anger and the anxiety and the lack of leadership. And I think the story in time will be told that even if we didn't get it completely tactically right sometimes on the days, overwhelmingly we've ended up with politics being given an opportunity to work because it hasn't got worse. And secondly, nobody has been seriously injured. And I'll give you just two examples. I'd much rather listen to respected voices looking in at the situation. For example, the Chamber of Commerce in March absolutely endorsed the approach that I and the peers and I had taken. Absolutely. You had the United Nations rapporteurs sitting here watching, now recommending that other countries follow the approach of the PSNI. And, you know, we've ended up with a number of issues needing to be addressed, the grievances that were expressed, you know, under the symbolism of that flag, people feeling alienated in disadvantaged neighbourhoods, the lack of a flag protocol, the need to perhaps review the public processions, all that needs to be done still. But I'll come back to that point. We've ended up with nobody seriously hurt and an opportunity to progress.
In terms of the repercussions for those who were involved, is about 200 folk you have identified so far?
Yeah, far more. Yeah. I mean, I think it's about 177 charged, dozens reported, and we've been, as you know, I commissioned the Metropolitan Police team that was still in place, not because we had any lack of expertise here, but actually because I thought I wanted that CCTV analysis done. And that work will carry on relentlessly. Let me be clear. I am not looking for punitive. I'm looking for justice to be delivered here. So for those that threaten life, they will get what they deserve through the courts. for young people that got drawn into this, I hope some of that can be dealt with through a restorative way, and for matters of obstruction, we'd deal with that proportionately. But we said from day one, there would be a consequence. We said from day one, we were not going to accept law-breaking, even if at that moment in time, we had to deal with it in a proportionate way, because to do otherwise would have meant we couldn't have dealt with the writing.
Some of your officers couldn't be too happy, though, being asked to stand in the middle of what was going to be inevitable kind of attack and injury. I mean, you may not have had very serious injuries, but you did have, night after night, more of your officers been injured, probably, than members of the public.
Well, fortunately, again, that hasn't involved serious injury, and we do report all injuries, quite rightly, because that's our responsibility. One of the things I was very keen about when I took over, and one of the things I'm so proud we did in getting extra money, was to completely refresh all of the public order equipment. I mean, people don't realise this. We have got brand new Land Rovers, which didn't happen by chance. So people have been given their up-to-date, modern, internationally best kit to deal with these scenarios.
But I don't think you could pay me to stand in the middle of that situation.
But you see, there's a volatility in Northern Ireland, and if you're going to expect people to deal with it, I'll come back to the justification, they deserve the best kit. We put 600 more officers in operational duties, so we had a greater resilience. And last year, we doubled the level of our public order training. So I had twice as many people to deploy in December than I did the year before, and none of that happened by chance. In fact, it happened because although the risk assessment said that public order is getting better here, we looked ahead again. So we had a far greater degree of capability to deal with it, which we made deliberate choices on. Now, that's just to say, because I'm very mindful of officer safety, and you know, you don't put new Land Rovers out there and more people and better training and more kit unless you have a heart for your people. But the second thing is, the best commanders in dealing with the public order situation are those on the ground. And they had the authorities to deploy AAPs. They had the authority to deliver the tactics they needed. But in the midst of a ballistic threat and serious violence aimed at the police, which is very different from what we saw in the UK where people ran away, you know, it's a very different scenario, those commanders made choices about containment rather than moving forward and arrest. And you know something, as Chief Constable, I have to rely on their professionalism and their judgment. And I stand over all the judgments they made,
and
because
they
made the right choices.
You can't or choose not to intervene on the kind of micromanagement.
Sitting here in the Gold Room, looking at the overall strategy, is very different from being a tactical bronze commander on the streets in Carrickfergus or in Newton Arts Road, dealing with the reality. But what I do is go out with them. So on weekends over the January and February, it would be wrong of me to intervene, but actually I spend a lot of time with officers talking about how they felt, where they had the best kit, being presented with a billiard ball, you know, from an officer that was, you know,
evidence.
evidence unfortunately can't be fingerprinted, but you know, there will always be, even within the organisation, in our debriefs, challenges about tactics. That's the nature, and that's a healthy thing to do. But overall, the strategy was right, and okay. I stand over it.